Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Squawk 7000. You can tell probably by the sound behind me that we're not in the studio for this episode. We're at an airfield where we love to be, particularly this time of the year in Clonbillogue. The main event happening today is the annual general meeting of Funfly Aerosports. More about that shortly, but it's also an opportunity for me to catch up with two people that I've been wanting to talk to for ages. One man, of course, whose name is hugely associated with this podcast, Mark Dwyer. Hiya, Mark.
Hi, Michael. Afternoon.
Catching you for this now has been my goal for a long, long time, because obviously all of the work that you've been doing with Flying in Ireland, and indeed in terms of Squawk 7000, and I thought we'd have a bit of a chat too about, well, let me put it to you this way. How come you find yourself here on a Saturday in June at an airfield in Offaly?
Well, I love flying, don't I? Well, it's mainly for the AGM we're here today, so of course it's an opportunity to reflect back on the year that we've had and how successful it's been and how much flying we're doing at the moment. And of course it's always nice to get down here and do a bit of flying when the weather's good.
What was the idea behind Funfly when you started?
Well, I suppose I think it all comes down to accessibility to flying. Historically, it's been quite difficult, I think, in this country, you know, outside of Dublin and Cork, maybe Galway and a few other places. It's quite difficult to access flight training. So we put our heads together. It's something that we were thinking about for years. And COVID, I suppose, gave us the time to sit down and actually put our ideas and plans together. But it's really just to make it as accessible as possible. And to try standardise the training as much as possible. A lot of us have experience in the commercial background, so we're trying to apply as much as we can the commercial concept of things. So the idea of standardisation, using technology to reduce the cost of training so that we can push out a lot of stuff through online means, which means people can study in their own time and they can prepare everything in advance so that they're much more prepared when they come to flying and they can get a lot more out of it.
It seems counterintuitive for somebody to think, you know, that something that's recreation and fun actually does really well with a couple of SOPs and standards and as you say, electronic support in place as well.
Yeah, it does. And it's not like, I suppose a lot of people might cringe with the thought of SOPs, standard operating procedures, especially people with a professional background. But it's really just putting in a basic structure that you can work everything around. Just the idea, you know, simple things like checklist discipline, like how to read a checklist properly and then have it structured in such a way that, you know, you're always catching errors, trapping errors. This whole concept of threat and error management, which is very common in the commercial world, is to try and apply that down to general aviation. It's actually incredibly effective. But you have to really understand it to be able to teach it. And I suppose we have that background in commercial aviation that we can kind of bring that to general aviation.
The spread of instructors kind of highlights that as well, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, we're a bit picky about the instructors we have, all right, which is nice because we've got a good cross-section. And I suppose every club is struggling to try and find instructors at the moment, every flying school as well. But to find somebody that has a background in commercial aviation but also has a love of general aviation. There's a lot of them out there, but that have a current instructor rating as well is also a challenge. And then of course everybody's busy when the weather's good, so we've got a really good team, a good cross-section of instructors from you know, commercial background flying Boeing and Airbus, and then general aviation commercial instructors with either professional instructors or also people with, like, you know, parachute experience, all that kind of stuff.
Tell me about the choice of aircraft.
So for years we were looking at, we were thinking of doing it without really having a plan in place, the various different options. And the challenge, I suppose, with a training airplane is to find something that can stand up to the abuse of student flying. And I mean that in the nicest way possible.
Yeah,
but
true.
But if you think your average general aviation aircraft might do on average one landing per hour, whereas a training airplane is probably going to do 8 to 10 landings per hour, maybe a little bit less than that. But that's a huge amount of extra wear and tear of the aircraft. So you're kind of looking at something that is kind of affordable to operate, is durable, can stand up to the, you know, is a strong undercarriage, has good handling characteristics, is safe. You know, there's a lot of things that go into the mix, and there's a lot of airplanes out there, but actually when you narrow it down and all the criteria that you want, you're left with a few. So the Savannah fitted the bill for us. It was a really excellent choice. We're doing a massive amount of hours at the moment, and they're incredibly durable. We've got pretty much 100% dispatch rate. They've stood up really well, and we've gone through some quite heavy maintenance on some of them now. We've come up through 1,000-hour checks on some of them, and, you know, there's no issues whatsoever, so they've worked out really well.
How did you end up starting to fly in the first place?
There's a question. Well, it's something I always wanted to do, as far back as I could remember. And my dad had done some flying lessons, so I suppose he had an interest as well. And as he always used to say, it was the marriage license or the flying license. So, so unfortunately, he gave up after a few hours. But yeah, I suppose I got the love of it from that. And then my uncle as well, who... Alan, who many of you would know from flying in Ireland as well, he's a huge interest in aviation. So it was kind of always around the family. And then when I was 13, I got a flying voucher for Christmas, and I was hooked after that. So I did that. Yeah, I was almost 14 when I did that. And ironically, my first instructor was John Dowds, who is now an instructor here with us at Funfly.
No.
He's just started recently.
Nice.
So that just goes to show you how small the aviation community is. So yeah, I did a couple of lessons until I was 16. At that stage, you couldn't really log hours until you were 16. Did that, went solo when I was 17. Yeah, kept at it ever since.
Yeah, do you notice that he just put an entire career in one sentence and kept at it ever since? I mean, the other question I'd be curious, and maybe you know the answers, how many types have you flown?
Oh, I don't know.
A fair amount now.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably in the order of about 50, but I'd have to check my logbook for that. But yeah, but the usual types, there's a few interesting ones in there. I suppose the range of Cessnas and Pipers would be in there, a load of Microlights, and then a couple of old vintage types as well. So yeah, that's a good range.
Flying the Chipmunk, in fact, last weekend.
Yeah. Chipmunk, one of my favourite ones. The Irish Historic Flight, which was set up in 2015. Great initiative to try and celebrate, kind of highlight the history that Ireland has in aviation, which is, it's quite impressive when you think of it for such a small country.
Something happened in the background there, yeah. I think somebody's getting a bit of a round of applause for their jump otherwise.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah,
so it's a great initiative. So instead of storing an aircraft in a museum, the idea here is to try and keep the aircraft alive. So it started with two Chipmunks, 169 and 170, and 168 then, which is the original Irish Air Corps Chipmunk, was donated very early on. So 2015, I think we had all three flying. And then it's grown over the years. So it's we've got the Stearman, I want to say 2019 maybe, Boeing Stearman, EIHFD, which the link there to history would be that was bought by Tony Ryan.
Yes.
When it was actually, I think it was in the late 90s, when, so Ryanair were operating the 200s at the time, and they had just bought their first brand new 800s from Boeing. And I believe the story is that the Ryan family wanted their own Boeing, so they bought a Boeing Stearman. And if you look at it, it's actually the Ryanair colours, which is not that obvious initially, but it's got the yellow wings and the dark blue fuselage. And at one stage, I believe it had the harp on the tail, which has since been removed. And now recently, this week, I should say, we've just got the Reims Rocket 208, which was moved from Baldonnell on Thursday evening, I think, this week, and is now in Ballyboy, so you should see that on the airshow circuit this year.
And of course, I think, you know, you look at the Reims, the amount of hours on those aircraft apparently is phenomenal.
Yeah, and I'd say there's a fantastic list of names in the logbooks as well, even for the Chipmunks as well. Having brought them around the country to various events and lots of retired pilots coming up to you to say that I did my first solo on that airplane, or I flew that, because obviously there would have been a lot of Air Corps pilots that learned to fly in those chipmunks, but also the Irish Air Corps trained the Aer Lingus pilots as well. So there's a lot of Aer Lingus pilots that flew those aircraft that did all their initial training on the chipmunks.
A 182 just taxiing past us here to do that. Mark, there's a question, I suppose, that occurs to me. And, you know, I've returned to flying after being away from it a number of years, and really am enjoying it again. Again, it's because flying is accessible again. But you're working at it. Yeah. You're instructing at it.
Yeah.
Do you still enjoy it?
I do, absolutely. I enjoy the variety of it. And lots of people say, well, how can you get out if you're working, flying, you know, every day during the week, how can you get into a small airplane and enjoy it? And for me, I see them as two completely different concepts, where, you know, flying commercially is enjoyable, it's a great job to have, but at the same time, it's very structured, it's very regimental, and it's very procedural in what you do. Where you go to fly a small airplane is completely different. You have the freedom to go where you want. You're under no time pressure. If you want to go somewhere, you can go anywhere pretty much. And if you want to stop and have lunch or stop somewhere else for a cup of tea, you know, it's great. So it gives you the freedom. And that's something that you don't get with commercial aviation. And then instructing as well. You know, most flight instructors will tell you there's something really nice about being able to teach somebody something and then watch them demonstrate it back to you. And then, of course, the ultimate is when you send the first solo.
I was going to say that is a moment. I've spoken to many instructors and just tried to get in under the skin of what's it like to stand at the side of the runway while this person takes an airplane off on their own.
Well, most students probably don't realise, but the instructor is usually a little bit nervous as well. But no, we normally have every confidence.
They're ready for it.
Yeah, they're ready for it, exactly. So, no, it's really great, and it's it does fill you with pride when you see them do their first landing, and they come in and they shut down, and they're so happy with themselves. And it's, you know, I even remember mine, going back 17th of April 2003.
I don't forget the date.
From my 07 in Weston, in Charlie Hotel Mike, so I can remember all the details. And yeah, it's like, I think most pilots would be able to tell you the date of their first solo, because it's such a... I suppose a landmark in their career.
Anything on, you know, often to talk to pilots about their logbooks, and I'm not going to say logbook, books for you, of a particular flight that stands out for you, or one that you really truly enjoyed.
It's hard to say one in particular. Yeah, there's been some really nice flights that I've done. To try and put one in particular, I'm not sure. We did one a few years ago, 15 years ago probably. When was it? 2006 or 7. We took a Piper Cub from Weston and we flew to Abishrul. And it was a really nice one. It was an L18. It was no electrical system in it, so it was a hand swing. And, you know, you could fly the door open. We flew to Abishrul and we took a Samba from Abishrul. We flew to the Aran Islands. That was really, really nice. And we did the whole, you know, flying over the Father Ted ship. And all around there. So the Aran Islands are spectacular scenery. And we've done a lot of flying around the West Coast as well. What else? My first solo on the Chipmunk was a great one as well. I remember that one. That was at a Ballyboy airfield. I flew gyroplanes for a while as well, actually. Yeah, my first solo in the gyroplane was really cool. I actually really enjoyed flying. Now, I don't fly them anymore. But, again, my instructor, Paddy O'Reilly, is also an instructor here at Funfly. So, again, it just shows you how small the community is. Yeah.
You mentioned we, because sitting beside you is Jenny Jacobs. Jenny, your connection to this man?
Oh, going back a long time now. We passed the 20-year mark last year. Yeah, so, thank you. Yeah.
And he mentioned some of those trips. Do you fly yourself?
I don't, no.
Have you avoided that?
I don't really know. I've been around a long time in the background. And I suppose it's quite... Well, recently, really, our 4-year-old daughter Maeve, she's shown a bit of a keen interest. Mark took her. We were down here about 2 weeks ago, and Mark brought her for a little taxi along the ground, and she's kind of been hooked ever since. But I think when she started showing an interest, I realised I was outnumbered in the family. If you can't beat them, you got to join them.
And to that extent, that's another opportunity for us to have a chat about your involvement in aviation now, which is pilot.ie, which we've mentioned on the podcast before, but tell us more about it.
Yeah, so Mark and I recently, and Maeve, we recently moved back from the UK a couple of months ago. We were living over there for 10 years, and something that we really noticed back here was the impact of Brexit and how difficult it is to get your hands on a lot of things. And even if you can get your hands on things, that fear when it arrives, is it going to come with a customs declaration? Yeah. You know, are there going to be taxes? What are you going to have to pay? And that unknown. And, you know, it's definitely put me off, you know, buying things. And so we realised that must kind of, you know, carry through into aviation. And so I guess that's one of the reasons that we set up pilot.ie, which is our kind of online pilot supply shop. And the idea is that, you know, we negotiate with all the suppliers in the UK. You know, we take on that stress and work out the charges, all that kind of thing. And then, you know, on our website, what you see is what you pay. So it's kind of hoping to take the stress out of it for people.
We're going to let the 182 taxi pass us. It's the longest pre-flight check I've ever heard. Lovely distinctive sound off that airplane too. Pilot supplies, you know, think about it. I suppose it's one of those things, as a student, you're probably reasonably keen to get all the bits that you need in advance. You've actually put all of these things together as packs or kits for people.
We do. We've put together some different kind of starter packs. You know, one of the things that people obviously associate with learning how to fly is like, oh God, that's super expensive. Mm. And, you know, I'm going to need all this very expensive, you know, kit. And actually that's not always, you know, the case. And it is, you know, there's certain essentials that you need, and then there's certain things that are nice to have, and then there's certain things that you buy that you're never going to use. So, you know, we'd like to think that we're kind of just helping people with those starter packs to filter out through the stuff that they actually need, but then also, you know, the extras if they've got birthdays coming up, you know, the nice things that people can buy for you. It's, we've got a range of training manuals. We've got all the key books 1 to 7. Yes, so we've got all the training manuals, and we've actually just this week got in a whole new range of books, kind of more, you know, general aviation interest books. Got flight bags. We've got all the kind of navigation equipment that you'd need kind of for the beginning.
There's a few other bits there, so if you want to let the 182 go past again. Yeah, there's a few extras there. So if you're doing, say if you want to expand your horizons and get a night rating, we've got a night rating, instrument rating, which is the new rating from EASA that's come out in the last couple of years, tailwheel, differences training, all that kind of stuff. So there's the basic PPL training material, and then there's the stuff that actually, you know, maybe... you know, I want to do something like this in the future, so you can get a book on it as well. And then, like Jenny said, there's the kind of general aviation interest books that have a link to Ireland to some description. So either, you know, it might be but there's one there recently about the Defence Forces and the development of the Air Corps, if you've got an interest in that. And then there's a few other books written by Guy Warner, who's a very well-known author about aviation topics of the island. So yeah, there's various, and it's something that we're looking at, and we're constantly increasing the range and looking at other options. And if anyone has any feedback, you can send it to us, and we'll see what we can find out.
Keep coming up with the idea, especially with Christmas. Did I say the C word? I did. No, the Christmas word. I know. It's only June. I know. I know. You mentioned something there, Mark, which I want to just triggered me to ask you again about it, which was that something that Funfly brought in recently, which was the Wings Award. And this again is something I know that you've got a big interest in, which is PPLs. People, when they've got their license, you know, get a little bit fed up of burning holes in the sky, as you'd say, and you've even an idea for them.
Yeah, so we started the Wings, the Funfly Wings Award last year, and it's it gives PPL, so somebody who's just got their license, a bit of structure to go and do something else. So we've all seen it in the past where the PPL course is very structured in that, okay, I need to do my first solo, I need to do my first solo nav, then I need to do my mock test and my test. But once that is finished and you're out on your own, you've no targets anymore. So it's nice to have something to work towards. So within the Funfly Awards, it's broken down into four areas. One is the number of hours you have for the bronze, silver, gold. There's various different PIC hours that you have to achieve. Then there's a navigation challenge where you need to fly. So for the PPL, you need to 150 miles. We said, okay, for the bronze award, let's make it 200 miles. So land at two other airports and do a 200-mile cross-country. And then the silver one is a little bit more, and the gold one's a little bit more again. And then we have a safety seminar. So this afternoon, after the Funfly AGM, we're going to have AirNav Ireland here to talk about airspace. and that will count towards a safety seminar for anybody who wants to do that. Mm. And then there's an additional qualification. So that could be something like your tailwind differences training, floatplane rating, night rating, instrument rating, all that kind of stuff. So it's to try and challenge people to get another qualification, not just to sit on their PPL and do nothing, but actually go out. And schemes like this, and they're popular in other parts of the world, they've proven to increase flight safety because, one, people are staying current, two, they're expanding their horizons. And it's not a bad thing to sit in with an instructor from time to time. And normally, a pilot will do that every 2 years when they do their refresher training for their SEP. But actually, if you're going to do differences training for a tailwheel or an SEP float an SEC float plate rating, something like that, then you know you're sitting in with an instructor as well, and you always learn something when you do that. So it's got a great effect on aviation safety as well.
As I said, the main reason we're chatting to you today, of course, is the AGM. It's good news for Funfly. You're growing.
Yeah, absolutely. Over 150 members now as we speak, which is not bad considering we're only two, coming up to 3 years old. So that's been really positive. We've had quite a few students recently that have qualified and are now doing things like the Funfly Awards. A lot of them will be have one eye on a commercial career, so they're kind of jumping into our building, but they're actually using the Funfly Awards as a kind of a structure to do that. So they're saying, well, okay, I need to do a 200 mile cross country, where am I going to go? So we've had them, you know, fly up to Donegal just in the last week. Actually, we've had airplanes in Sligo, Donegal, Waterford, Abbeyshrill. We're in most days Weston. I think two of our airplanes are in Weston at the moment, are on the way up there. So yeah, it's great to see so many students keep flying after they qualify.
And I think the other thing that's interesting to observe is the mix of men and women and the age range as well. It's very representative in the group.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got, you know, we've students, we've had quite a few students solo at 16, which is great to see. And yeah, right at the upper end of the scale. I don't want to give away anybody's ages, but they go right up there. And yeah, a good cross section. So yeah, it's really great to see. And that comes back to one of the core values of the club that we started, is to make flying accessible. We're based in Clonmacnoise, so we're in the Midlands here, but we have a huge amount of people that are actually relatively local to the airfield that have started to fly, which I'm pretty much convinced would never have started to fly only for the existence of the club. And that's why I'm convinced that, you know, if there were other clubs in similar, in each county in Ireland, that they would equally do well. I think there's a huge amount of untapped demand in the country. If you look at the demographics, and I suppose we compare ourselves to the UK a lot, like we're way down on pilot numbers, even adjusted for population size. It should be a lot more popular. Now, of course, they have the history, I suppose, to go with, and they have the infrastructure there, which we don't have to some extent. But it is, I think there's a huge amount of untapped demand. So I think all the clubs are busy at the moment, and a lot of them are struggling with instructors. But I'm pretty convinced that if there were more clubs in the country, there would be a lot more people flying.
And, you know, we don't do too much controversy, but it for a long time it was quite difficult and very expensive. If you decided you were going to do something past the PPL, or a new regulation would come up and hit you every now and then, you probably would say to me that there's a lot more logic and clear thinking in the process these days.
Well, one of the great things I think now is that the rules are standardized. So we're working off European regulations, which means there's no difference in national rules, or there's very little difference in national rules between all of the countries. And that makes it it makes it easy now. If you have an Irish license and you want to do a seaplane rating, like, you can't do a seaplane rating in the country at the moment, but you could go to another country. You know, Lake Como in Italy is a place in Poland that does them, and you can do your seaplane rating, put it on your Irish license without any issue, and continue on. And there are quite a few Irish pilots with seaplane ratings. There's a handful of seaplanes in the country, but that would have been a lot more difficult under the JAR system. And it goes, you know, the same for instrument ratings, multi-engine ratings, all that kind of stuff. It does make it a lot easier now because the rules are standardised.
So another load just going there into the pack with the Irish Parachute Club, with Mark and Jenny here. Another lovely weekend of flying. And as we bring our chat to a close, your hopes for pilot.ie and what we should look out for?
Well, with the lovely kind of summer weather now, we want to get out and about a little bit more. So obviously we're down here today at the AGM, and we brought a bit of stock with us that people can have a look at or buy if they so wish. And we've a couple of events booked in 2 weeks' time on the 25th of June. We'll be up at the Tobowen fly-in. And hopefully we will get to Weston at the end of July, and we're booked in for the Bray Air Show as well. So, yeah, we'd love to have people come along and have a chat and have a browse.
Yeah, come talk to us. And, yeah, if there's... I suppose I'll try to get to as many of them as well as possible, and particularly Bray. It'd be nice to talk to people there, and if anyone's interested in learning to fly or needs a bit of advice on something, we'd be happy to help out.
Thanks to Mark and Jenny. That's it for another Squawk 7000. More in a couple of weeks' time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.